The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly, or should I say Techs Weekly. Thank you very much to our listener at NigeNet, the Guardian Special Technology Podcast, coming to you from Austin, Texas and the South by Southwest Interactive Festival. Every year, the geeks descend on this university town in central Texas, and now, on its 18th year anniversary, the South by Southwest event is far bigger than ever. There are 20,000 people here for this show alone, with 25 tracks of interactive content taking place in venues throughout the city, tackling topics as varied as the invisible game layer, the future of journalism, how to take code to the next level, and how to create a personal cult. Mostly, it seems to be about being awesome and how to rock things, if you go by the titles on the schedule. Later in the program, Jemima Kish journeys across Austin to meet some of the many Brits in town here for business. We'll find out what really is unique about the web, and we'll get designer, performer, and digital joymaker Zay Frank's view on how South by Southwest has evolved over the years. It's all in this week's edition of Tech Weekly, so stick around, y'all. Tim Wu is a professor at Columbia Law School and a fierce participant in the net neutrality debate. He recently published The Master Switch, a historical look at who's controlled information with every communication revolution and what we might learn from this for the future of the Internet. I met with him after a session at South by Southwest to find out a bit more.
Master Switch is a long history of the information industries, from telegraph all the way till Google. It's an effort to understand the repeated patterns that we see surrounding new inventions, these moments of utopian excitement and dreams about the future, and the tendency for those dreams and those open periods to be followed by consolidation and centralized control.
Well, we saw that certainly with the printing press, which is where the initial concept of copyright emerged. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about your history? Because I'm fascinated by the notion of these patterns and what we can learn now from how people are thinking about regulating the Internet based upon what's happened before.
Well, I'll give you an example. In the United States, the phone industry, telephone industry, 1910 about, had literally thousands of phone companies, very robust competition. And it was a bit chaotic, but prices were low. A new industry, people were very excited. They saw it as sort of a liberation for the farmer and for the man in the country. By 1921, it was one company, AT&T, and it was a state-sanctioned monopoly. So these things can switch really fast. Another example is, again, an American example, is the radio in the 20s. Very utopian industry, dreams of what it would mean for a different kind of, even a different kind of human existence where everyone was connected by the radio. And in very short order in the United States, 15 years into it, it comes under a single heading.
You've got an understanding of the other communications and information economies, whether it's the telegraph or radio or telephone. What is it that's unique about the web that's causing us to really have to rethink some of these issues?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? That's the question of my book, which is I don't presume there is anything different. I think it's distinctly possible that what we think is very special about our own times is merely a repeat of history. And people thought the radio was different than anything that came before, and the telephone and the film and cable TV, all these technologies, people in their time think, well, this will never be like what we had before, and then sometimes they are like what we had before. So I believe it's an open question. On the other hand, there are things about the Internet, not the web so much, but the Internet that might make it different than that which came before. But I frankly think the jury is out. It was designed in the 70s by sort of idealists in computer science with very unusual ideas, radical ideas about how it should be organized. There's a spirit of decentralization, South by Southwest, where we are. There's thousands of entrepreneurs starting new things. It has this different kind of entrepreneurial culture. On the other hand, there's a lot of things that aren't different than in previous times. Even as things changed, two things don't. Laws of economics and human nature have not changed, and I believe, you know, things like network effects and economic principle have created monopolies in our own time. If you look at Facebook, for example, they are by far the leading social networking site, and it's because everyone else uses it. It's very similar to the telephone in the 1910s. We think the Internet's different, but it actually is giving birth to a lot of dominant companies, even monopolies, now global in scale. And so you start to wonder, well, actually there are really just about, you know, four or five really big internet companies. Is it really different than the film industry in the 30s, which was five huge studios? The other thing hasn't changed is human nature. Consumers, often with new technologies, at the beginning very excited, they enjoy the novelty, they like the diversity of content, but then further into it they start saying, well, it's a little too chaotic, unreliable. We need something safer, more secure, something like Apple gives out now. You know, the iPad kicks out the bad stuff, only the good stuff. So there is a real question as to whether we've changed or whether ultimately we don't like a fully open system and we want something a bit more closed.
I'd like to take a quick look at this ideology that you say is embedded in the network. You know, you say it is, it's the Northern California ideal. But that comes from a very specific standpoint. That comes from a very Western standpoint. And now what we're seeing is in many ways a kickback from the East, which is arguably a collectivist standpoint. Do you see any difference in the development of web technologies or software or even network technologies that are coming this way that have a collectivist element?
A collectivist is one word. I think that I don't know if I would credit to the East alone. In the 20th century, and in Europe, there's long been also very centralizing tendencies as well. Worship of size, fascism is a Western invention. You know, there we have this in the Western tradition too. This idea of putting all the power in one force that controls everything. The old phone networks and the old radio stations, TV stations, BBC, frankly, when it started, the idea was, well, put all the power in one person or one company and let them do a good job. And I think that tradition, the battle between sort of a more individual and a more centralized power approach, open-closed, is really human. I wouldn't say it's East or West. I would say it varies. And, you know, England and the United States were both obsessed with centralization for a lot of the 20th century. And then they go through these counterwaves where people are like, we went too far with that stuff. We need to go against it. So I think that kind of oscillation between centralized and decentralized is as old as human history.
Well, given that this is a network, a technology that did have this openness principle at its outset, it seems that there is a utopian or even an idealist element associated with most new information technologies. So why, given that, as you argue, human nature seems to coagulate around larger centralized monopolistic content or content providers, why is this a bad thing?
Human interest is paradoxical. Like, what humans want is very, frankly, contradictory. They want freedom, they want individuality, but then they want things to be kind of taken care of them for them. Americans, in particular, are obsessed with convenience, and that tends to favor a more centralized approach. So I just think what we want is deeply inconsistent. You ask people, do you want freedom? Yes. Do you want Apple to take care of things and get rid of the bad apps? Of course. I think our better natures come to have some resistance against centralization. I mean, we have a tendency as humans to worship power, but I think it's a dangerous tendency. The whole idea of basically a democracy is accepting a little bit of inefficiency in exchange for more freedom and a different kind of society. And occasionally we forget that. It's a lesson that has to be relearned over and over, and it's the same lesson going on right now with the Internet.
Do you think that there will be a generational shift and ultimately we will have the same kind of regulated environment as the telephone, as TV, et cetera?
I mean, I hope not. I hope not. I believe it is possible for idealistic systems to survive, but it takes a lot of work. I mean, basically, democracy is a very idealistic system. Republics in general, as opposed to monarchies, are generally difficult to maintain over human history. They're very idealistic projects, and they take enormous work to maintain. So I hope so. I think the open internet is something special, has a lot of meaning for human expression, and gives a lot of human freedom. But it doesn't stay that way by default. Everything runs in the opposite direction, the same way that democracies traditionally have run towards dictatorship. You know, just look at the French Revolution, for example.
Final question, topical one, is what can we learn about net neutrality? What can we learn about the viability of net neutrality in a world in which an entire country can attempt to, and for several days, shut down effectively access to?
With the revolts in the Middle East, the link between internet freedom and freedom has become clearer. You know, the net neutrality debate is much smaller in the sense that we're just talking about carriers, not dictators. But the principle is exactly the same.
Final question. What do you see 10 years down the line?
One of two futures. You have an entrenchment of four or five major internet dominant firms that are global in scope and are basically what we think of as the internet. And we stop thinking about the internet so much as we're thinking about, you know, Apple, Google, Facebook, and a few other firms, and they stick. Another kind of future is where that just is a phase. They're powerful now. They pass. The ability of the internet to create entrepreneurial activity makes all these companies fade and new ones rise and displace the old. I hope we have the second one, but history suggests the first one. I have to add that these are not my these are my own personal opinions and not the views of the Commission, the Federal Trade Commission, or any of the commissioners. So, we shall see.
We're at Chinwag's Global Grill, which is just outside the convention centre with some banging music going on. But this place is stuffed with British startups. So it's not so much a global grill as a British grill, really. It's packed with startups. They've all come over to promote their companies and do some learning, as they say in Texas. So let's go and talk to a few. So what's your name and what's your day job?
My name is Andy McLaughlin. I'm co-founder of Huddle.
What are you here to learn?
That's a great question. I think at South By, you can come with an agenda and then end up doing almost nothing and learn a million things that you never planned to. So the honest answer is I don't know, but I'm sure there'll be a lot.
Standout moment so far?
Seeing a guy get tasered in the face on 6th Street last night was particularly interesting, quite scary. But in terms of the actual conference, I went to a track today about for seven reasons so why your employees might hate you, and that was really good. It was a session for people who have just started managing people. You know, and as we've grown quite a lot in the last couple of years, so I now actually have people working directly for me. So lots of interesting learnings there.
What's going on with Huddle? You've got a US office now, so you're based in San Francisco, and what else is going on?
So yeah, I mean, the company's been performing well. We're now like 57 people, I think. We have a bunch of people in the UK, a bunch of people in the US. So without kind of giving away too much of our product roadmap, there's going to be some interesting desktop stuff coming soon.
I'm Guillaume from Scoopit. I'm the CEO. So Scoopit is a platform that we created to do something in between blogging and Twitter. It's a platform where anyone can create a page on his or her favorite topic, either something you feel passionate about or that you're an expert of. And I think it's great for digging out those, long-form stories that no one had the time to read on Twitter because they were just taking too much time and you were in a rush. But also to kind of put your vision of a story. So it's like a blog, but you're actually curating the best articles or the best content you find on a given topic. And, we've been live 3 months, and it's doing really great so far.
Are there any particular challenges or problems or kind of dynamics about the state of the industry that you were hoping South by Southwest might be able to give you some answers to?
Well, I'm new to the media industry, but I used to be in the music business. So I think that there are a lot more participation, a lot more thoughts, a lot more use of social media and of this new technology than there used to be in the music industry. I think the solution is by also, building audience that participates. I really believe in that.
Alex Clive, CEO, World TV. We're just getting ready finally to do our big version 1 launch in May of this year. We're really excited about it. World TV lets you create your own TV channel. Full screen, it looks like TV. You can build it out of YouTube videos, Vimeo videos. We support about 25 different video websites. And essentially it's a very sophisticated playlist builder, but very, very easy to use. Our whole end game now is to put World TV on TV. So if you create a TV channel with World TV, you'll actually be able to have it on TV and people will be able to watch it there. So that's the big move that we're making in the next few months.
What are you hoping to learn at South by Southwest, or what have you learned so far?
Well, I love South by Southwest. I've come here in previous years, and for me it's 40% panels, 40% parties, 20% trade show. So, the parties obviously is where everything happens in the evening. That's where you really get to know people. The panels, though, we've all been to trade shows, and generally the panels are dire. You don't really feel like you've learned anything. Here at South by Southwest, the quality in general, there's always going to be exceptions, but the quality of the speakers is just so high. And, you know, where else will you get the head of Facebook engineering or Twitter engineering, you know, telling you what open source tools they use to run their business, you know? So, I mean, it's kind of priceless information.
My name's Andrew Robertson. I'm from London. My day job is sort of, I do TV stuff because I need to, you know, pay the mortgage. But what we're sort of trying to do is sort of kind of got to the point where I realised we're creating all these formats for people like Million Pound Drop, and you realise actually everyone else is taking this up. No one else seems to be doing that sort of content. So sort of, that's what we've left, to kind of do that for ourselves and create sort of, you know, IP essentially.
So what are you doing at South By? What are you here to promote or discover?
So partly to sort of see what everyone else is talking about, and also seeing how everyone else is sort of working, especially with that sort of bootstrapping, which is now the key word, isn't it, everyone's talking about, which we have to do. So sort of looking at what everyone else is doing and seeing sort of similar ideas and so we can develop ours and get it launched.
Very nice. And what's really impressed you so far?
As in talking wise, I was at a really good one this morning, which was about sort of startups, and I think it was called The 5 Startups You'll Meet in the Deadpool. And it was brilliant because it was actually guys who had created their own startups, and B, were now financing other startups, so they could sit on both sides.
Scott Hacker from the Knight Digital Media Center. We're a part of the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism, kind of a satellite organization there, and we do digital media training for mid-career journalists.
So what's special about South by Southwest, and why are you here?
This is my 6th year, you know, and every year I sort of swear I'm not coming back, but then when the time comes around that I can't help myself because it's just that good. What's special, it's, you know, it turns your brain on. I mean, it gets you excited all over again about your industry, turns you on to other things you may not have been thinking about. You're able to network and get in touch with people who are sort of thinking along the same lines and people who aren't. Yeah, and then, of course, there's the music and the food.
Any standout moments for you so far?
Standout moments. I just attended the creative JavaScript session. The guy was doing mind-blowing stuff with JavaScript and making it, like, really accessible and really doable and sort of getting, you know, like, regular HTML dweebs to, like, feel like, wow, I could actually, you know, do particle animation. So that was very cool. What else did I see that was amazing? The NASA JPL demonstrations yesterday of visualizing satellite data, which sounds really dry, but it was just a real turn on in terms of education and how much could be sort of known about our Earth and the environment just from, you know, what the satellites going overhead are doing and collecting when you gather all that data and aggregate it and visualize it in the right ways. There are some powerful lessons in there.
You're on the front line of helping journalists come to terms with the big shift that's going on in their industry, and I suppose in bringing in some of the most relevant trends in the technology industry. What's the biggest challenge at the moment, the thing that news organizations really need to get to grips with that they're still failing to do?
We have select individuals who come in realizing where they need to get to and what they need to do to get there. And, you know, they have come up throughout their entire lives knowing that they need to be good storytellers, they need to be good reporters, and they're worried that the digital skills are going to take them away from being storytellers. And so the first lesson is for them to understand that, no, we're going to make you better storytellers. And you have, you know, all these media available to you, and if you master some of them, you're going to, A, keep your job, and B, be able to tell more compelling stories. So there's that. Secondly, there's the culture in the newsrooms, especially as it comes from on high. Middle managers, upper managers who don't get that and who see it as a distraction.
What's next for the Knight Center? What's coming up in the next year? Nothing exciting?
Wow, I hope I don't get canned for saying this, but we're actually getting ready to do some big training for AOL's patch for a lot of hyperlocal sites.
Jemima at Chinwag's Global Grill. This year's South by Southwest is an unwieldy chaos of panels, sessions, and tens of thousands of geeks with faces pressed against mobile devices trying to navigate venues across the city. But they are united in one thing. The emerging trend of this year's event is game, the game layer, gamification, game mechanics, you name it, however you want to call it. Countless panels and a keynote were chosen by the community that tackled exactly this topic. Now, I spoke with South by Southwest veteran and documentary maker Zay Frank, a web designer who spent a decade creating playful things for online audiences, about this year's conference and what this year's trend means for his personal brand.
Well, I was invited down to speak by a guy named Casper Sonnen, who runs part of ITFA, the documentary film festival. And so, you know, he and I have had this long kind of like conversation over the last few years about, you know, the modern notion of documentary, which I don't really feel like I'm a part of, but he kind of pulls a lot of the work that I do into that realm. So, you know, I just sort of did these two panels, which were focused on new forms of documentary, and in both cases I was like, this doesn't really apply to me, but I think, you know, I mean, it's like work in media is starting to blend across all these different avenues, so these traditional verticals that people create panels in and things like that start having a lot of cross-play.
How much do you think a festival like South By has been responsible for that? It has been a real cornerstone and has, you know, it put its neck out, basically, by putting interactive next to music, next to film.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that kind of, like, fun, playful attitude where people really kind of get to let loose, I think, was a real alternative to a lot of these conferences that were gearing themselves up much more around information dispersal. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like this is a community that started to own the fact that they're really cool and happening. And along with that comes a lot of, like, you know, a lot more chatter, a lot more opportunities to, like, rethink what you're doing.
You've spent the past 10 years making playful experiences online. Tell me a little bit about them.
The ones that are closest to my heart are community-based projects, participatory projects. So we did, like in 2006, I asked my audience to try to create an Earth sandwich where you put two pieces of bread perfectly opposite each other on the globe at the same time using geolocation tracking and stuff like that and make a sandwich out of the earth. We've had, you know, dress up your vacuum cleaner. There's a project live right now, which I started in 2008, called Young Me, Now Me, which I saw that The Guardian kind of did a riff on actually last weekend. But in that case, you take a childhood photograph and you replicate it as an adult. And there's a book coming out on that. But an offshoot of that, which has been actually really wonderful, is one called Like Mom, Like Dad, where you actually take a picture of your parent when they were around your age, and then you try to replicate that photograph, and then you're encouraged to submit a little essay of how you're like and different from your parent.
Having done this for 10 years, Zay, how do you feel that suddenly this playful aspect of the web is it's almost as if it's coming of age? If this is in fact the year where the game is the killer app, you know, a couple years ago it was Twitter, and you know, various location-based things have been the killer app at South by Southwest. Are there any particular game types of things or playful types of things that you have seen at South by Southwest that you think are particularly exemplary, perhaps not this year but at other years?
Instead of pointing to specific examples, I think that what I'm more impressed by are people that I feel like are really committed to, you know, what I just sort of described, which is the harder to get at down in the trenches feeling of playfulness. And I would be wrong not to mention Jane McGonigal in this context. I think her new book and just tracking her projects is you know, a really wonderful way for people who don't know much about this, who have a very kind of like maybe passive or even contradictory view of what games are. It's a really great way for them to come into starting to understand what the challenges are, starting to understand what some of the almost like mathematical parts are, and then the emotional parts, and see how they're sort of intertwined.
Do you not see a danger that perhaps, given that you've got so many advertising execs, so many marketing people coming here almost trying to suck these amazing ideas out and then implement them in their own personal ways, that this playfulness might actually stall, that it might get used up and people will think of it as, you know, something that was last year?
Maybe the best articulated statement of fear I've ever heard on this subject is Jesse Schill's Visions of the Gamepocalypse, which is a brilliant, brilliant talk about what you just said. For my part, you know, I don't think that we should blame bad implementations. We shouldn't throw out gamification just because it's poorly done. I mean, you know, we gotta like try a lot of stuff before we hit it. Yeah, I just can't help saying that you know, the feelings that come with play and game, the idea of feeling empowered, rewarded, engaged, excited to connect with other people, these are all incredibly powerful, positive things. And I would certainly encourage young people who are getting into the interactive and virtual spaces to really look at that, these kinds of the theoretical work behind it, and also just the hands-on stuff as a perfect way to get into it.
Final question. How do you do South by Southwest? I come in for sting operations and jump into maybe one panel a day or two panels a day and then go hide in a coffee shop somewhere and work. How do you do South by Southwest?
I get a little overwhelmed by big crowds. So the way that I do it, luckily I have a friend that lives down here, a really close friend. So, I kind of hide away there, but I come in and try to find more quiet corners and gather, five or six people that I really, really enjoy, and see how long we can have a great conversation for it.
Zay Frank. See some of his fantastic playful creations at zayfrank.com and at star.me. That's all for this week. Thanks very much to the Guardian's team, to Jemima, to Zay Frank, to the Brits Abroad, and to Tim Wu. I'm Alex Kratosky. The producer was Scott Colley. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.